Vote for Hillary Clinton if you paid me. You can go out. You can beat the pollsters. You can beat the commentators. You can beat Washington. And you'll do it by doing what we did for Brexit in Britain.
That's Nigel Farage, who is the leader of the Brexit movement. Emma yeah. Thompson, now that you've heard what he has to say, your comments of his foray into U.S. election politics?
Well, there are no words, really. Nigel Farage is a, you know, I mean, he's a nationalist, he's a white nationalist, and that's what Donald Trump is, and so it's very distressing.
And what do you mean by white
nationalist?
What do you mean?
I mean, I feel that in some ways the less said about Donald Trump, the better. But I do see that it is a terrifying situation, and actually, Mr. Prashad, who I was listening to earlier, was so wonderful on the subject because he said, from the outside looking in, one of the things that actually I mean. Obviously, if I were an American citizen, I would be voting for Clinton. And one of the reasons for that is that she understands the reality of climate change. It is extraordinary that any person with anything really between their two ears could deny climate change at this point. I mean, that is an act of such extraordinary denial in the face of 98% of the world's scientists coming out and saying, actually, you know what, it is. Even the IPCC, which is normally quite a sort of gentle commentator on it, says we're in really big trouble now and we really have to act. So if he does get into power, he's going to have an awful lot to deal with on that front. But it is terrifying from every point of view. I did agree with Mr. Prashad, though. I agree.
Emma Thompson, we're going to have to leave it there. That does it for our show. Academy Award-winning actress and longtime activist. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 8:01. Time for Positively Revolting.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Pan-African Women's Day, Saturday, August 27th at In Other Words Bookstore in Portland. A panel of African women from different organizations will be highlighting the issues impacting African women across the globe and to highlight the necessity for African women to be united and organized on a worldwide basis against imperialism. Edutainment and childcare will be provided. Again, that's Pan-African Women's Day, Saturday, August 27th at 5:30 p.m. at In Other Words Bookstore, 14 North Killingsworth in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Produced by Her, a screening of four documentaries that were made in the Produced by Her media program. The screening will be August 28th at 5 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. The short films explore the commercial sexual exploitation of children in Oregon, the importance of safe space in the LGBTQ community, women and street art, and the experience of black girls in Portland. Again, that's Produced by Her, a documentary screening, Sunday, August 28th at 5 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, 4111 Northeast Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Break our legs, and we say thank you, and the offer is
Good morning, good morning. It's about 5 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, your very own community radio station. It's kind of cozy. It's yours. Because you are the community, we are the radio station, and together we make brilliant community radio. So this is Positively Revolting. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And this morning we are here to instigate conversation. That's right, broaden the public dialogue and discourse once again with Positively Revolting as we look at revolting, as we look at what is revolution. We want to have a conversation with you, dear listeners, and really take advantage of this format, which is talk radio. We have the question, what do you actually think revolution is? Are you actually for a revolution? This is a word that gets sort of put out there.
Bantied about, one might say.
One could. And accurately so, Lynn. And the thing about it is, a lot of times, you know, hey, it's revolutionary. It's now also branding, which I love. Right? Like, you can buy revolution and, you know, it's easily marketed. But what is that? Is that actually revolution? I would argue nay. No, it's not. But it does appeal to, you know, that sense of rebellion within. So marketing gurus have learned to use the same nomenclature. And I think that we're watching that drift into, politics, where I've been rather interested to see for the last decade or so that fairly mainstream politicians like to throw in the word revolution as they try to get your vote. I'm going to go ahead and put out there, it is never a revolutionary act to cast your ballot for a mainstream politician. I'm just going to say, that's not revolution. Other folks, you know, there's been the ongoing debate, revolution or reform. And I think, again, those lines get blurred. And what do people mean by that? So we're asking you, what do you mean by that? Are you more in favor of casting away the old system and starting from scratch, where imagination is our only limitation? Let's talk. What do you want to see in your society? Will it take revolution to get there? Is it more reform that you're seeking? Do you think that's a more reasonable way to go? We want to talk with you. 503-231-8187.
You know, the word value for revolution is in Scrabble it's 13, and Words with Friends it's 17. It was just
thanks for that. That's just for now I know. Trivia.
Well, when I was trying to look at the difference Webster wise of revolution and reform, it's very hard to get a sort of a clear definition of revolution. And the first thing that came up when I looked it up on a search engine were commercial companies.
Like I said, it's
branding.
It's branding.
Yeah.
I will never get over the fact that there was some shoe. I don't know. I don't know shoe brands, really.
You just know what you like. I know.
I know that I can find a good pair of Doc Martens at most resale shops for 20 bucks or less. But that's what I know. And flip-flops. I love flip-flops. Do they have brands? I don't know if they have brands.
So what about this?
But what I do know is that I remember seeing these ads for some shoes. I don't know, maybe 6-7 years ago. And as you walked, it would make the little anarchy symbol. It had anarchy in your shoe print. That had to be revolutionary, right?
Oh, man.
I know. It made me want to, run screaming through the streets or something, brandishing a large flag. And I don't know.
The term jumps the shark comes to mind.
It did. Yeah, it did.
Another thing that comes down when you're looking for examples, they keep wanting to shove you over to social evolution.
Well, and evolution and revolution, I think, kind of are.
They rhyme.
It's true. I used to have a blog, actually, called Revolution Equals Evolution. I did. I used to have that blog. It was my very first blog. I enjoyed it. But besides the rhyme, I think the two are connected, because I do think that if we want to evolve into a state of being wherein we actually aren't relying upon might makes right, wherein we're not following the leaders anymore, wherein we're not basing our social interactions on acts of oppression, then really we need a revolution. That's what I think. So I think that the two concepts are tied.
Well, part of this for me came from listening to an interview, it wasn't exactly a debate, but it was two people from the Bernie Sanders new to-do is called Our Revolution. And it is, if anything has co-opted the term revolution, it would be this organization. Eight of the staffers left when they decided to put a fellow named Jeff Weaver, who was his campaign manager, who I have problems with in many ways. Now, I'm not endorsing, by the way, I'm just talking about this. I'm not for or again. But it was interesting to me, and Greg Pallas commented on this too, that Jeff Weaver did not have any comments or complaints about the way the primary elections were handled. There was just about as much problem as Al Gore did with the 2000 election. And the Sanders campaign seemed incredibly co-opted to me when they got to the convention. So anyway, there was a debate because eight staffers left the Our Revolution. One woman's name is Claire Sandberg, and she was the former organizing director for Our Revolution until it hit the streets, and seven or eight of them left. The rest of the staff said they were in solidarity, but they weren't leaving. And they had turned this organization into a 501c4, which is very dry. So that's a certain nonprofit. The Daily Kos is a 501c4. We are at KBOO are a 501c3.
That's right.
So C4s actually
you can get into your IRS code and figure out those.
Yeah, I did that for you.
That's
don't
so
do
cool,
it.
Cool, Lynn. That's
don't
so cool.
Do it. Don't try.
Thank
to,
you.
You're
Thank
welcome.
You for going there.
Well, you know, I tried to read the TPP.
That's
yeah,
awesome.
So they don't have to. They are basically political action committees, but they don't have to tell you where their money comes from. Claire Sandberg accused Jeff Weaver of wanting billionaire money instead of the $27 at a time. Larry Cohen, who is now he was a former president of the CCW, your lovely union, the union we have here at CABU, I believe. CWA, yeah, communication workers. Oh. Yeah, but. They've sort of replaced these young people with old white guys. Jeff Weaver, Larry Cohen, who is the incoming board chair, who gave us the same rhetoric and in the end said, well, what we really want to do is reform the Democratic Party. And I'm like, a revolution it cannot be then.
That's an entirely different thing.
Yeah. Revolution, which sparked... I was thinking of The Princess Bride and Mandy Potemkin saying, I don't think that means what you think it means.
Indeed. Well, we have the bases loaded. Let's go ahead and talk
to
Chris. Good morning, Chris. You're on the air.
Thank you guys for having this show and asking this question.
You are so questions. Welcome.
The first thing that comes to my mind is this quote that I heard some years ago from Angela Davis that really struck me, and it was that...
Quote from the best.
To be a revolutionary is a lifelong commitment. It's not just a thing that lasts a day or a week or a month or a campaign or...
You don't just do it for the summer.
Yeah, and I struggle with that because there's times where I kind of want to just not, you know, but, you know, and stop struggling. But that, I think, is the first thing, is that a revolution, I think, is ongoing. And I think it's something that really is the responsibility of every generation to look at what needs to change and how we can fundamentally alter this system. And I see it more as a process than an event or a thing that happens and then is over. Thanks to Angela Davis. And then the other thing is, you guys mentioned evolution and revolution, and that made me think of Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture, who said, you know, that actually revolution is a scientific historical process, because when the evolutionary process is disrupted, which it has been by global corporate capitalism, which has systematically silenced the voices of the vast majority, the 99.99% of the planet, in order to enrich that 0.01%, then evolution has been disrupted. And revolution is the natural response in order to get back on our evolutionary track as a species. And I think that's a really compelling way to think about revolution, not as some wild, radical, out-of-the-blue thing, but as a natural response to the loss of our independence, our freedom, and our sense of humanity. And then the last thing that I think should be a part of this conversation is the definition of violence and nonviolence, and particularly as it applies to property. Because we have this really interesting idea where even folks who advocate nonviolent responses to systemic issues, they always fall back to property as kind of the bottom line of what constitutes violence. And I want to stretch that a little bit and ask, where does that come from? If we're in this capitalist system and property is a fundamental aspect of capitalism, right, then, you know, why is it that we suddenly draw the line at property, and what is property, right? And you know, the anarchist quote, I don't know exactly who said it, but property is theft, right? So if we really dig deep into this thing that we can't own the earth, and everything that we build on top of it is really not ours, but it's something to be shared, then we have to kind of step back and ask ourselves, when we're looking at rational responses to the loss of our power and our independence and our freedom to evolve as a species, is the destruction of quote-unquote property really an invalid response, even if we consider ourselves quote-unquote nonviolent? And I think here of Trey Arrow and, you know, the Earth First movement and people who are still in prison for eco-terrorism, so-called, right? Yep. So those are kind of the things I think of when we talk about revolution, is the lifelong commitment, the fact that it is a scientific historical process that's a natural response to limitations that are imposed on us, and we have to really wrestle with individually and collectively, how do we define an effective response that really values humanity, but then really, really interrogates how deep we need to go to fix this thing.
Thank you, Chris. You have put some thought into this.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
And I so appreciate, in fact, couldn't agree with you more, pretty much on any point. Thanks very much for your call.
Yeah, and I look forward to hearing how this whole conversation develops throughout the hour.
Don't we all? Thanks very much. And it was the French theorist whose name, God help me, I've never been able to say, because I'm lost in French. But the property is theft is Pierre-Joseph Proudhon, otherwise known as Proudhon, which is how I've always said it, and I know that's not right. So, French speakers, help me out. Yes, he is one of the finest writers on anarchist thought, and I have never actually learned how to pronounce his name, but I should. Maybe somebody could school me right now this very morning. You never know. But that's who first coined property is theft. Cody, good morning to you. You are on the air. It was sort of a surprise moment. Good morning, Cody.
I guess the question is, will this revolution be internal or external? You ladies sound very astute on history. We have things called counter-revolutions when dealing with these revolutions. And these counter-revolutions are almost always bloody. And then I can't help but think about the average American and the level of mediocrity we've had. As Lynn pointed out earlier, about how things were exposed in the Democratic Party, and no one raised a finger or cried bloody murder. And they tried to deflect the entire situation. And I'm going, this is the beginning of a revolution, but it looks like that little spark has been successfully extinguished.
Do you really even think it was a revolution? Or, I mean, my sense is that that word, that's sort of what we were trying to talk about with the show, that that word revolution has been co-opted.
Yeah.
By that organization.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It will be corrupted, mainly because the powers that be have to corrupt it if they
want. Well, I mean, co-opted. They sort of used it as branding. I guess corruption is the same.
Well, co-opted, yes. And you're right. You're absolutely right. They have to, for their own safety. I mean, these people are going in the opposite direction of what the people who had the idea of what a revolution really is. So, I mean, these guys are trying to create a corporate system in the United States of America. And there are people who are trying to revolt against that. The question is the average American public ready? And what will we have, what will we witness as a result of this pushback? Because the powers that be are very sophisticated, and they don't want a French Revolution on their hands.
No.
They really don't.
Or any other kind of revolution that I can figure. Because, I mean, again, the powers that be, it would be in their interest to thwart any revolution, because if you look at the word, revolution means to turn it over. Right.
Yes.
And that means
yes.
that those that would be in power now would no longer be in power, which most people in power aren't down with. Like, they don't want to give that up once you get it.
Yes. Well, I have to ask myself, when people use the word revolution, I look at the average American and I scratch my head and I'm going, I don't think we're ready for one just yet. And I think there are going to be some historical events that's going to happen that's going to push us in that direction, but until then, everyone's basically trying to protect their own interests at all costs. And the powers that be, I got to give them credit; they're pretty sophisticated, and they're clever. And I tell people not to underestimate what these people are capable of when it comes up to psychology, because they're going to do everything in their power to maintain what's left of this fossil fuel industry industrial complex that's running us right now. So, yeah, I guess the revolution will have to be internal first before it becomes external. I mean, it'll be a holistic thing when it starts, you know, like when people start changing their lifestyles and eating certain foods and doing certain things. It'll be seamless. But if we try to jump into an actual physical revolution before the internal one, the power of the bee is going to it's going to be a disaster for everybody. So yeah,
all
right. I'd like to hear what you guys have to say out there.
All right, thanks very much
thanks,
for your
Cody.
Call. 503-231-8187 this morning. That's the number to call to join us on the air in this conversation. We are asking questions. We don't know. We don't have special answers. We don't have like the teacher's edition notebook or anything like that. But we thought that it's high time that we actually unpack a couple of words that get thrown around a lot. What do people mean when they say that they want a revolution? What do people mean when they say that's too drastic, that's only going to get us in trouble, we need to reform the system we have? What does it mean?
And what does reform mean? Does mean what happened to the Welfare Act in during the Clinton era? Yeah.
Things have many things have been reformed.
Reform, you know, how has that term been tossed on its head?
Indeedly. So all of these questions and oh so many more, dear listeners, we have until 9 o'clock this morning to engage in this dialogue with you. Please do give us a call, 503-231-8187, or you can also leave your comments on our Facebook page. You can follow along throughout the week on Facebook, like our page. You can find us on Facebook. We are Positively Revolting there. And in the Twitterverse, you can find us as a Positive Revolt. You can get us in any of those methods. But please do connect with us and enjoying this conversation. 503-231-8187. Let's go ahead and talk to Camilo. Good morning, Camilo. You're on the air.
Good morning. I think this is an excellent program, and you're raising questions that I think have to be asked. But unfortunately, I don't think we're going to find any answers, but we have to have this discussion.
Yep.
Well, that's the most important part. Answers, you know.
A few things that I want to say about it. One about Bernie Sanders' political revolution. I think clearly the designation of revolution as political means that it's not going to include what the true revolution must be about, and that's the economic system. So it means that he's only going to go partway, and I think that events that are going on in our revolution really indicate the real meaning of that. And I think that there's a personal test that you can take to determine whether or not you're ready for revolution yourself. And I'd say the first thing is whether or not you're willing to give up meat, because that's probably the third most significant contributor to carbon emissions in the economy, meat agriculture. And the next thing is what will you do with your pension, with your 401k? Because this really represents the essence of capitalist economy. I don't know what I would do with mine. I really have to rely on the capitalist economy to provide my wherewithal, because Social Security isn't sufficient. And Social Security really is the only true store of value that is not related to the kind of reliance that we have on the economy to provide for our future. So there's really no answer to this question until we're really ready to give it all up and make these kinds of personal sacrifices. And as Cody said, they're not going to give it up.
Okay.
Not easily.
Thanks very much, Camilo. I think that it's, what are you willing to sacrifice? I think that as we look at, you know, an unstable system, I think we can go ahead and go out on a limb here and say that the system we are currently living in is unstable. To rely on pensions, to rely on investments, to rely, which is really our choice as people who have, worked and maybe, did everything that they were told to do, perhaps we even have some sort of pension program through workplaces and have made it through some sort of retirement age and are relying on those pensions. That's all built on Wall Street, right? And so as the system tumbles, so do those stocks, so do those pensions. And that really does hurt the working class. And so what do we do about that? Well, I say end-stage capitalism is upon us, and that right now we do rely on those things, but at some point they're not going to exist. So what's the next plan? How do we exit this cash economy? Because this cash economy is coming down. It's leaving us. So how do we leave it, right? That's something that we really need to think about. Direct barter economy, how does that work? How do you stay in a house? Do you stay in a house? What does private property mean? That question got asked earlier. Do we in fact attempt to hold lands in common? How does that work? Yes, I do know some history, and I know that every attempt to do that, well, not every attempt, many attempts to do that throughout history across the world have been put down really violently by powers that want to consolidate and privatize ever more of this planet.
People that were in this piece of land, Turtle Island first, seemed to be able to
before
do it.
Before the colonizers.
Yeah.
Yes.
Also,
well, pretty much around the world. That, the indigenous way of living on the land is living with the land. It's not deciding that you own it because some piece of paper has the fiction on it that this is now yours because anyone has the audacity to own the earth.
Or the
my personal
gave
opinion,
it to you.
Just saying. Or you've borrowed it from a bank because the bank had the right to own it? I don't think so. Anyway, to me, that kind of private property is actually pretty close to blasphemy. And it's a system I've been forced to live under. So let's figure out something else. Let's do that. Let's be creative together, shall we? And let's not be all that Pollyanna about, getting there, because the transition is hard. It's hard. I wouldn't say it's not. But the system that we're living under is murderous, and it kills people daily. So what are our options? Let's check those out, shall we? 503-231-8187. The number to call, please do join in this conversation. Let's talk to Victoria. Good morning, Victoria.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, so revolution to me is the potential of a seed. And revolution is the seeds that we plant every day in our thoughts with our good intentions in the world and how we communicate and connect with others and further that revolution. So air, water, food, these are all revolutionary ideas because we need them all. So my focus is to create life in a revolutionary way by planting food and sharing food with others.
Right on.
And that's what I'm doing. I'm doing it as organic as I can and spreading information about geoengineering, which is the air that we breathe, and about Monsanto and Syngenta and all the other corporations who want to dominate the world with their aluminum-resistant seeds. So that is my form of revolution.
Thanks very much, Victoria.
You're welcome.
Give it up.
I think that, you know, earlier, it could have been Cody, in fact, talked about revolution as a way of life. It's a lifelong process.
He quoted Angela Davis.
Indeed. That was Cody, our very first call. And again, what you do every day with your time, I do believe it's our intro song mentions, you know, every act you take shows the world how you cast your vote. And they don't mean in a ballot box in the song, I swear unto you. How do you live your life? And dedicating your life to sharing and growing food, sustenance, the stuff that sustains us, it's pretty revolutionary. 503-231-8187.
Give it a call right now. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. You're listening to KBOO in Portland, and we are talking about redefining and getting clear about this term called revolution and reform. What is, you know, what is the difference? I started from being sparked by an interview that went on Democracy Now! Between Claire Sandberg, who was the former organizing director of Bernie Sanders' new organization, Our Revolution, and Larry Cohen, who is now the incoming board chair, who eventually got down to saying, we're just trying to reform the Democratic Party. So I just didn't want those two terms to go unclarified, because I think it's so, as Ani was talking about earlier, the branding of the word revolution. If you look it up on your favorite search engine, you will find I won't say capitalist, but you will find commercial ventures that have
they're capitalists. Let's face facts. Okay. Really? Come on. In this system, unless there's some worker co-op.
I feel badly that I don't remember the guy's name from Microsoft that's got, who made all his money with Microsoft.
Billy Boy?
No, not Billy Boy. It's it was one of the people right under him that has, revolution is his term for everything. He's got revolution.
Paul Allen.
Is it Paul Allen?
Yeah, I don't know who you're
I don't
talking
know.
About.
See,
but I think that you might be talking about Paul Allen. Anyway.
That's what I mean. I don't remember his name, but he's one of the Microsoft fellows. And Revolution Wine, he has branded Revolution and made a mockery of the name, I think. So we're just trying to clarify that and find out what you mean. What does it mean to you, dear listener? And how can we get this clear? And, you know, to me, part of the unrest that's been so interesting in this political campaign, though sick to death of it I am, is that there is huge unrest. And to me, the rise of Bernie Sanders, which was more with young people and people that had a more leftist bent, and Trump's folks, the bottom line to their unrest seems the same thing to me. There's change that's not helping them. which is, of course, our ascent into oligarchy, pretty much. And the different ways that they are thinking of to deal with it are completely opposite. Yet, this is the bottom line of revolution, the seeds, shall we say. And it's interesting to me to see the two different ways, two hugely different ways it's going. And it seems like, you know, what's underneath that is the same thing.
So many things to talk about this morning. 503-231-8187. The time is slipping by. We've got about 20 more minutes to take your call. Let's talk to Victor, shall we?
Sure.
Good morning, Victor. You're on the air.
Good morning. Hi. So I kind of have two points. The first is so you're talking about how the Bernie Sanders campaign kind of co-opted the term revolution. And I think that the term that they use, political revolution, is kind of an oxymoron. Like, the political class opposes revolution. So if we're going to have a political revolution, that's really no revolution at all. It's more reform, like you were saying.
They think it means something that perhaps it does not.
Exactly, yeah. And I just think that, like, a political revolution isn't a revolution at all. Like, the problem is that there needs to be an ousting of the political class in general, and that the politics is really the form of oppression, and that, you know.
Well, when you say political class, what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, those who basically are you know, the legislators and the executives.
Those that hold public office.
People who hold public office at the high levels, national public office, stuff like that. Because those are the ones who are basically complicit in the state capitalist system, you know? And either way, in a state capitalist or a state socialist system, it's the political class who is fomenting the oppression.
Okay. Radio. All right. Thanks very much, Victor.
My second point is that the first caller, he was talking about the scientific conception of revolution.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was interesting because it made me think of this concept of entropy, right, at an atomic level. And, you know, those kinds of things kind of ripple. And I think that when you take entropy from one place and you stick it in the 1% or the, you know, hundredth of 1%, as he was saying, it kind of breeds unrest in the rest of the 99.99%. Like, it's creating an atmosphere of chaos. Whereas if you...
Can you speak up, Victor? You're kind of fading in and out.
Oh, I'm sorry. My cell phone has some issues.
Yeah, it's okay. I just wanted to try to get what you're saying there.
Yeah, So I guess I'll let you go if my phone's having issues. Sorry about that.
Now we can hear you. You can finish up that point.
So, So basically, what I was saying was that when you concentrate all this power in a small area, everywhere else there's chaos. Whereas if you kind of embrace an atmosphere of freedom, then the chaos can kind of settle itself out.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for your call.
503-231-8187, the number to call. Let's talk to Chris, shall we?
Good morning, Chris. You're on the air. Chris, turn down your radio. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay, turn down your radio.
Okay.
Okay, very good. Good morning. What is your question or comment?
Morning. So I was just calling to see if we still get in on the radio show.
This is, and you are.
You're on the air, babe.
Oh, wow. Okay. Sorry about that. Revolution, you know, talking about that, I feel like the establishment has turned it into a buzzword, like gluten-free or...
Branding, we call that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, so it's like, you know, people really look up the word revolution. I mean, look up the Haitian Revolution and... see how buzzworthy that word is and what it really means. I mean, for me, it works as like a, you think about like revolving, like turning around. Like you said, capitalism is coming to an end. I mean, especially with all this, you know, first there's that Shkreli guy with the cancer pill, and now you got this lady with the EpiPen, you know, thinking that, well, we've saved so many lives and doubled life expectancy that we should just...
Let me just clarify. Yeah, the woman who is the chairman of the company that makes EpiPens raised the price of them, like, astronomically.
Oh, great. Mine just expired. I have to go get a new one.
Fantastic.
And then, thank you, capitalist.
Yeah, well, then she took it down 50% because she got so... But still, it used to be, like, what, $5 or something, and now it's over... 100, yeah.
600.
Well, it was 600. Now it's doing. Now she's taking it back down to 3.
Ah.
Oh well, thank goodness.
I know. Isn't that better?
That's so nice. Isn't that good? That's good.
Just enough for my pocketbook.
A little change.
Yeah. So I mean.
So it's obscene.
You know, really getting into it. Just I mean, to be clear. Like, you know, we need to turn around from the cash-based system and realizing that, you know, cash is just the catalyst. It has no. It has no more significant meaning than we give it. You know, what really is the important thing is the human interaction and the exchanging of services. You know, whether you use, you know, little pieces made of bone or whether you use things made of paper. I mean, it's the exchange. And, you know, people need to get away from this monetary idea and just, you know, really figuring out what they inside can contribute because, you know, your gifts will make room for you. So.
Okay, well, thank you. And we, you know, the hard part about that is you still have to pay your mortgage or your rent to have a place to live.
It's a complicated issue.
It's a very complicated issue.
Things are complex.
They are, which is why they need to be talked about.
And here we are giving that space. Let's have this conversation.
Yeah. Hey, Bushka.
Good morning.
You're on the air. Oh, excuse me, Mike.
Good morning, Mike. You're on the air.
How about a map?
How about a map? What kind of map are you wanting?
A model. Well, I'm offering a map, a model that I don't know all the details of, but I recognize it happened.
Okay.
Okay, I'll throw it out there.
A little terra incognita never hurt no one.
If you look at the rise and fall of Uber...
Oh, please tell me they're falling.
I was
going to
say, have we watched the fall of that yet?
I don't think they're falling.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
how do you think they're falling?
They lost $1.2 billion in the last few months.
Okay. All right. Cool. So looking at that.
On the surface, well, that's a little microcosm of our system, right? On the surface, you say, okay, so many stock numbers and so much cash they lost and so much investment they lost. It seems kind of clinical, you know, scientific. But there's real human emotions behind that pull in and pull out and that push in and push out and jumping on the bandwagon and withdrawing. There's a real human emotions behind that. And it's kind of there's some political aspect to it. The belief that Uber is going to be fine, being completely wild west, unchecked, crazy profit machine, is dwindling now. It's being tempered by we need some rules.
Really, I have not seen that happen.
I think your analogy is kind of leaving us flat.
Just because I personally have not seen that happen with Uber. They're becoming stronger and kind of almost a ubiquitous term like Kleenex now. And people use Uber all the time. In fact, they are about ready, and I can't remember where it is, if it's in Singapore, to have driverless cars.
Yeah.
Because won't that be fun?
To do anything they want. Sure,
yeah.
Sure.
And if they lose a little money, apparently, it's not bothering them. And they are, I don't know how they bully their way in to every market, but they do.
Well, that's why I twisted it around to really focus on recognizing the emotion behind that pullout.
Pull out of what? I don't understand what you're saying. I'm sorry.
$1.2 billion is just part of it. You know,
okay.
It's also all the pushback from democracy, basically.
Okay.
It is a model. We don't want to destroy and do away with Uber.
We don't? Speak for yourself.
Or the opportunity for that system.
We don't?
We want to...
Why do we want to keep that? No, let's go ahead and ask you this. Why do we want to keep that? Why is that a social good? Why is Uber a social good?
Because of, and this is pretty clear, I think, to most people, that the world you'd have to live in to destroy, to say, okay, no more Uber, it's not an acceptable world. You know?
Wait. Let's actually unpack that because I'm fascinated.
How much power do you have to say, okay, no more Uber?
Well, looking at the exploitation of privately owned business in their workers' lives.
Uber is becoming regulated. Uber is.
All right. I haven't seen that,
so it is a process.
I'll take your word for it.
It is a process.
Point of this, then.
Taxi drivers and stuff, commercial drivers, they have rules and insurance.
Actually, Uber doesn't. You're not insured as a passenger. I think we're going to.
No.
Taxis are different.
Taxis are different than Uber.
So that's becoming more like.
We're a little off topic. I think we're just slightly off topic here, Mike. And
the evolution involved in the differences between taxis and Uber. I'm confused at this time. We're going to let you go. And
thanks for your call, though.
503-231-8187 is the number to call if you would like to join in this conversation. Maybe you can help us understand what is going on, because I'm no longer sure. And I can let you know this about that. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 o'clock, One Land, Many Voices is off this month. Instead, we will hear the latest from the series Law and Disorder. At 10 a.m., Air Cascadia is off today. We will hear Flashpoints in its entirety. Today, Kevin Pina hosts an interview and forum with Green Party vice presidential candidate Ajamu Baraka. At 11 o'clock on Pacific Underground, the theme is thirst, including the thirst for power, the thirst for culture, and more. Thank you, all KBOO members, for making this possible with your generous support. We are, in fact, listener-supported. If you're not currently a KBOO member, you can take care of that embarrassing little social problem right now by going to kboo.fm, clicking on Donate, becoming a member of KBOO, knowing that you are doing your part to support independent community media, where we can have conversations like this, where we can ask you, our community, to actually talk about what it is we mean when we say we want a revolution. Lynn Hetz talked about why she wanted to have this discussion this morning. For me, I wanted to have this discussion because I hear this word a lot, and I've heard it a whole lot over the last, 8 months as more and more people got involved in this political system because they got excited about a candidate who, let's face facts, was running on one of the two major parties. I think that it is always dangerous to put a lot of hope into any one political candidate. I don't necessarily think voting once every 4 years or once every 2 years or, whatever, even annually in little municipal elections across the country, I don't really think that that is actually revolutionary in any way. It is the system we have, and sometimes you choose to work with that system. Many people choose to work with that system. I vote. It's true. I do. I believe in dual power because this is the system we have. And I think that reforming it while it tries to kill us is probably a smart idea. But I think it's also smart to, in fact, try to build a new system that is not reliant on the rules of this one. I'd like to actually build a society that doesn't try to kill us. And, I guess the second part of why I really wanted to have this conversation today is because I watch all the folks, well, not all of them, many of the folks that got really super excited about perhaps some revolutionary aspects of a major campaign recently now become utterly disenchanted and feel like, well, that was interesting.
I know. I hear what it's a long game, people.
Excuse me. And now they, are disenchanted and they'll just become inactive again. And I think that's tragic. I think that's totally tragic. It's actually time to get about those revolutionary principles and discuss them and deepen them and figure out how we can build a new society. That's what I think.
Okie dokie. Let's see what... do we have Bushka on the line? Let's see what Bushka thinks. Oh, okay. Then we will have Richard. Richard, you're on the air. Welcome to Positively Revolting.
Hi, this is Corey.
Okay.
All right, Corey. Well,
Corey, good morning again.
Good morning to you.
Good morning, guys. I'll be brief because I know it's a Friday show. When I hear this revolution talk, yes, I hear it on the Bernie supporters, and I hear it coming from Trump supporters. And I guess my issue is that my reality is that I'm a person of color. And if you look at some of these Trump supporters and the things that they're saying, they're actually out there hurting people right now. I believe in Washington State, an interracial couple was stabbed. I believe, yeah, someone was stabbed or shot the other day. They might have been stabbed. But so these people, they're already saying that if Trump loses, we're going to do something. It's already happening, but it's a scary premise to think that if Trump loses, you know, what's going to happen to someone like me? A couple weeks ago, you guys had a show with some Bernie delegates, and it was an interesting show because, and not trying to be dismissive, you have the right to vote for who you want to vote for. I'm a veteran. That's what I believe in. And you have one vote, and you have the right to do that. But I don't have the luxury of voting for Jill Stein or Gary Johnson. Not trying to be flip. It's just that I don't have that luxury because I look at the other alternative, and I look at what Trump is proposing and just the sheer ignorance of it, and it is quite frightening to a person such as myself. So
I hear you.
You know, instead of discussing revolution on the Bernie side, you know, I'm all for it. Are you going to fight? Because what I see from these Trump supporters, these people are actually ready. They're so angry and ginned up and mad at brown people. They're actually willing to fight.
Yeah,
And fight for all the wrong reasons, but fight nonetheless and hurt people. So, you know, that's my two cents. This is very a real conversation to me because I'm looking at some of the rhetoric and looking at some of the reality as, you know, someone who's just trying to live my life knowing that some guy that's upset that Trump lost or that Trump might lose is willing to, you know, his revolution is basically killing someone like me.
Yeah.
It's real. Like I said, I appreciate the conversation, and I love listening to you guys. Thanks for your show.
Thanks very much for
that comment. That is,
and it is real.
Yeah.
And you know, and so I just want you to though engage in this one thought. You were talking about that's the anger that we'll face if Trump loses, right? If Trump wins, those same murderous followers will feel buoyed in their bigotry and hatred. And we also have a situation then, right? So I think the situation has been caused by this candidate actually stirring up the hatred, the bigotry, the idiocy that has been there all along, just sort of waiting for, you know, it's like when you blow on those coals, you know, when you're trying to start a fire and you blow in just that way and suddenly it kind of ignites. Yeah, I think the hatred and bigotry are those coals. And I think that Trump's rhetoric has ignited them. Right. So that's happening and it's real and it's there regardless. As you said, you're afraid if Trump loses. Well, and if Trump wins, what then? Right. So either way, those followers are creating a real threat, and it is real now. As you've mentioned, the attacks have started, and they can be tied directly to that campaign. I know that for myself and other members of the LGBTQ community, well, my partner's a trans person, right? And she has faced a huge upswing in that same hatred and bigotry that has been stirred up, that has been ignited. So this is real. It is happening. It is in our faces. How do we take action to stop it? How do we protect ourselves? How do we defend our communities? These are corollary questions that we really also have to engage with. So I just wanted to address that.
Really?
Yeah.
So you did. Just, so we've got a couple callers left. And we've only got 3 minutes of show. So, Joan?
I'll try to make it brief. Thanks for the show.
You're welcome.
I want to second the motion of what that gentleman just said. Frankly, we need to vote because people died to get the vote, remember? And it's really important that we vote. And I think since Hillary Clinton is the one who is there to beat Donald Trump, we have to vote for Hillary and get make sure, absolutely sure, that Donald Trump doesn't have a snowball's chance of in hell of getting into the White House because the guy is a lunatic and a fascist.
But Joan, what do you think about revolution? That was actually the question for this morning.
Well, revolution is a revolution in consciousness, and I think it means that we're not just acting for whatever our principles or whatever our ego tells us is the right, you know.
Revolution means that we don't act on our principles?
I just think that some people who talk about quote revolution are putting principles in front of real people, okay? And if the fascists get in and they're trying really hard, they're slithering out from their rocks now and doing everything they can to take the power.
So we abandon principle for fear.
No, we do not abandon principle.
Okay.
This is my point.
Okay.
That a very courageous thing to do is to realize that real people, the elderly, the kids, the poor, people of color, LGBT
people are going to
suffer. Real people are going to suffer if Trump gets in.
Step one,
he does not get in, and then we keep organizing and we make it happen from the ground up using our highest consciousness, which is not founded on hate. It's founded on the absolute certainty that we're all connected, that we're all in this together, and that whatever systems and things we organize have to be positive for everyone, not just for a few.
Okay,
all right. Thanks very much, Joan.
Thanks for your call, Joan.
And with that, like sands through the hourglass, so go the days of our lives, or at least the minutes of this hour. We are out of time. And it's a fascinating conversation. We didn't get to quite everyone. That is why we encourage you to, in fact, follow along on social media where we can continue this. Oh, for the next week and beyond. Let's go ahead and do that, shall we? You can find us on Facebook, like our fan page. You can find us there, Positively Revolting. And you can follow along in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. And with that, we wish you adieu. Fascinating. It's almost like we practiced that or something. We didn't. See you next week.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Extreme Amateur Games BMX Competition. Round 2, Sunday, August 28th at D Block Indoor Skate Park in Clackamas. This is Round 2 in the Mad Bro Extreme Amateur Games. Winners are allowed to compete in the following competitions and in the final. Again, that's Extreme Amateur Games BMX Competition Round 2. Sunday, August 28th at D Block, Indoor Skate Park, 8921 Southeast Jansen Road in Clackamas. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring. We are seeking a full-time AM News and Public Affairs Director. Applications are due by 4 p.m. Friday, September 2nd, at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Applications may also be emailed. Send them to hiring@kboo.org. To apply, please send both a resume and a cover letter outlining your skills and experience with regard to the minimum qualifications. And please answer the question, why is KBOO important? For more information and a full job description, go to kboo.fm/AM News. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. Again, that's kboo.fm/AM News. And thank you.
And this is KBOO.